Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day, and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Monday, November 21st, and that was a not-so-great day for fantasy football, especially if you're like me and have Josh Allen on all your good teams, as I've mentioned very often this year. Well, some of you might have some actually good results there. We do have some stinkers to get through, but as always, we're here to recap everything that happened on Sunday, and as always, here to do it with me is the great Scott Pianowski. Scott, you're looking beautiful there on the other side here now that your camera situation, your background situation has gotten the full Yahoo upgrade. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Yeah, I wish my teams did as well as I felt in the office. Shout out to Brett and Lauren, who were fantastic. They were here on Friday. They assembled. They gave love to my puppy. They were just absolute dreams to work with. And not only did they put up a background that's professional and finally up to speed with the rest of the crew, but there's a bunch of storage space that's part of the furniture. So I have like overabundance of books and stuff.
I know.
I needed to put things in certain places. So now not only have they set me up professionally, but they've given me a place for, you know, books and magazines that I've collected. I'm trying to get rid of this hoarding problem, but couldn't be more thrilled with the setup. Again, Brett and Lauren, you rock. I wasn't really sure what the appropriate gift was for your assembly crew. I should have given him some whiskey on the way out and said I just said thank you about 17 times. So I'll say it again. And how did I repay the fantasy public? I feel like I was right on a lot of small things and wrong on a lot of big things. And let's try to figure out what's going to happen going forward after every week's weird. I'm not going to call this a weird week because every week is weird. But I thought the 1 o'clock slate had more potholes and more bricks than usual. Maybe it's just kind of like, you know, if you live in the Detroit area, it's pothole season. You have to drive like a slalom course if you want to avoid a blowout in the tire. I felt like there are a lot of blowouts that were unavoidable in week 11.
Yeah, I felt the exact same way. So let's just dive right into it. And I think we can get it started right here with this game. Lions 31, Giants 18. A lot of unpredictable or at least perhaps unforeseen things went down in this game, Scott.
Yeah, first, what can we set our watch by? The spirit animal of the Lions is Jamal Williams. He's just a touchdown machine. He's going to be the touch guy, period. And they gave a handful of touches, just a limited amount of touches to DeAndre Swift. God forbid he'd ever get hurt or anything. He did get some late touchdown deodorant, but they just won't steer into DeAndre Swift. I think he's very difficult to trust for fantasy. On the other side, the Lions said, look, we're not going to get beaten by Saquon Barkley, and they weren't. Barkley went nowhere. He had an absolute dud of a game. Daniel Jones, now look, he threw a couple of picks. I get it. He was playing from behind, get some garbage time stats, but he throws for over 300. He runs for a touchdown. And a lot of us in week 11, one of the worst receiver weeks for unavailability, you know, injuries, bye weeks and all that. A lot of us had to play Darius Slayton or Wandale Robinson. And neither one of them scored. But I mean, you'll take 100 yards from Robinson or 86 yards from Slayton. That qualifies as a win. So I think the Giants, look, there are some teams that had records that probably didn't match their metrical standing. And Giants were one of those teams. So maybe they got exposed a little bit here. It was just disappointing. I think that if I told you the Lions would score 31 points, you'd be like, oh, okay, big St. Brown game. Well, he had volume. He didn't score. Oh, well, DeAndre Swift get back in the mix? Not really. Give me a touchdown. Oh, Jared Goff. How about, you know, 250 and two from Goff? Well, how about 165 and zero? It was basically you had Jamal Williams. You had nothing on that side. And, you know, I don't feel sorry for anybody who rosters Saquon Barkley because you've had such a great season from him. But it was the Daniel Jones show. It was the Wandale Robinson show. You know I'm a Darius Slayton guy. So I feel kind of inspired by that. I think Daniel Jones has a chance to be in a year where the poor quarterback play has been the story. The old guys haven't been good. The young guys haven't been good. I think Daniel Jones has a chance to be at least league average, maybe even above league average. I'm still sticking to that. He's got the right coach. Hopefully they can get a better receiver room going forward, although the receivers played okay today. Am I misguided to have some Daniel Jones optimism? We know he can run. We know he's a good athlete.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on the Daniel Jones thing. And it, like we talked about on the preview show too, it kind of comes in conjunction with the fact that they have a decision to make on Saquon Barkley too. And, you know, I know Saquon Barkley doesn't have a very big game in this one. By the way, I think it's kind of gone undersold a little bit that the Lions' run defense has actually been not great, but league average of late. Since week 7. They rank 16th in EPA per rush attempt allowed, but they rank 25th in dropback EPA allowed. So they've still been a bad pass defense, but their run defense has actually been a really solid unit. And I think that sort of showed up in this Barkley thing. But overall, like, I don't know if the you know, maybe the Giants can kind of go into next season with the idea like, okay, we can bring Daniel Jones back on like a prove it deal. Maybe they give him like the Jameis Winston contract. I know we'll talk about the Saints obviously a little bit later on, but that might be like a certain, but I think if Daniel Jones wants more than that from the Giants, like I kind of think they'll let him walk and try to figure out the quarterback position in a different way next year. But I hear your point overall though.
That's interesting because they're going to win too many games to have a good draft pick. Although it's such a loaded quarterback draft, it's, I guess it's conceivable. Maybe they could find somebody they like. I just look around the league and there's even contending teams are going to be unhappy with their quarterback room right now. So I don't know.
What do you think? But like, just in terms of doling out responsibility, cause that's like, I like doling out credit is like what, 50, 60, maybe even 70% of sports debates. What like percentage of credit would you give to Brian Daboll and what percentage would you give to Daniel Jones?
Great question. I think it's pretty close to 50-50, actually. I think because Jones has always been athletic and the receiver play for the most part, they've had one of the worst receiver rooms in the league. I mean, the Galladay contract was a bomb. For whatever reason, they just didn't mesh with Kadarius Toney. So they basically like kicked him off the team. It was like as a high school player. And they said, no, you're a college player. We're taking your scholarship away. They gave him away and, you know, gifted him to the Chiefs. But I mean, as much as I would like to talk up Slayton, I mean, on a good team, he'd be a 3 or a 4. We all know that. And even Barkley, I think Barkley's overrated as a receiver, has been for several years. I don't think that's the explosive part of his game. So I think I think I like Jones more than you, which is okay. I mean, fantasy is about disagreement, is about my take against your take. But it's funny, we're starting with this game. Usually the game we start with like, oh my God, the fantasy goodness. Look at like the 9 or 10 guys who hit. This is the first game we're talking about. And even this game left us, left me a little bit cold. So it's all downhill from here, kind listener. And I hope that maybe the turkey that's cooking in the oven. I eat pasta on Thanksgiving, by the way. Mm. Maybe the pasta that's percolating can take you away from, it's going to get uglier. This is the first game we picked. This is us coming out hot.
Yeah, right. It's coming out hot. But keep listening, though. We'll have some good stuff, though, even though the games might not be that great. Just a couple of housekeeping notes from this game. Wandale Robinson might have suffered a serious knee injury ahead of the Thanksgiving game, which is a huge bummer because he gets 100 yards in this game. I think he's looked really good in the role that they have him. So that's just more volume for Slayton. They got to get something from Galladay, although those guys don't really play the same position as Robinson. So, you know, the amount of attrition they've had to go through at that receiver room for New York, like you said, to Daniel Jones's credit, is certainly worth noting. And, you know, the funny thing about this Jamal Williams season, where he leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns, Scott, and you mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, he hasn't had that like explosive, you know, multi-touchdown game in a while. A lot of it coincides with, I'm telling you, I'm watching these Lions game, St. Brown gets tackled inside the 5-yard line all the time. And then like the next play is Jamal Williams punching that thing in. So good if you have Jamal Williams, who I think has emerged as like an every week must start RB2 at this point. And St. Brown, I think eventually will course correct. He'll find his way back into the end zone.
I never get the Richie James game right, but he did have a late touchdown this game. And if Robinson does miss time, perhaps I haven't looked ahead next week's schedule, but perhaps wide receiver desperate teams could talk themselves into Richie James as maybe like a 50-yard candidate next week, maybe like a 25% chance to score or something like that.
Well, they get the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, which is a nice smooth transition to our next game here. Yep. Cowboys, I mean, look, they were favored going into this game in Minnesota against a team that had only lost once and had just beaten the Buffalo Bills. Well, it sure didn't look like the Minnesota Vikings were that team. They lose 40-3 in their home stadium. You know, we talked last week on the recap show, like, hey, can we just give the Vikings some credit? Like, I was really trying to say, like, hey, they're an 8-1 team. Like, at some point you are what your record says you are. Well, The Vikings are not an 8. They did not look like an 8-1 team in this game. I mean, Kirk Cousins was on his ass from the first whistle. Like the Cowboys, and you know, Micah Parsons leaves this game with an injury. We'll keep an eye on that knee injury. Again, they have a Thanksgiving game, short turnaround here. But man, it looked like they'd kind of been playing him a lot off ball, you know, with Anthony Barr being hurt. And they kind of said like enough of that already in this game. They just let Micah Parsons and the boys go to work against a pass protection unit that's been a little hit or miss this year, Scott. And man, pretty much everybody on the Vikings offense turns in a disappointing fantasy game in a spot where it looked like they might have a nice little outing against Dallas.
Yeah, Cousins gets sacked 7 times and 30 dropbacks. That's just a huge number for a veteran quarterback and shows how dominant the Dallas defense was. And on the other side, I mean, we know the story in the Dallas backfield. Zeke is the guy Jerry Jones wants to live and die with, and he's the quote-unquote starter and the featured back. Now, both Zeke and Pollard got work in this game. Pollard looked electric, 2 long receiving touchdowns, and was better as a runner. Zeke really didn't go anywhere on the ground, but he punched in 2 short touchdowns. So all the deodorant there, you know, the game situation set up well. In fact, they were able to rest both of these guys, and Malik Davis did some mopping up at the end of the game, had like 7 carries or something like that. But this was one game I actually got right, just the emotional handicapping of a Dallas game that got away at Green Bay. Minnesota seemed very satisfied in that overtime win over Buffalo, and I thought Minnesota was due for a fall. Dallas was due for a surge. Certainly nobody expected 40-3, but I do think Dallas is definitely a better team. I think they're better in several areas, actually. And Dak Prescott's played pretty darn well since his injury. You know, he gets hurt.
Yeah.
And then you know, they do fine with Cooper Rush. And this idea, oh, well, maybe we should just take our time and let Cooper Rush play a little longer, let Dak get right. I mean, it's just a reminder that Dak Prescott, when healthy, is at least a top 10 quarterback. And you could talk yourself into him maybe being a top 5 or 6 quarterback in the right season. Maybe he could be an MVP candidate. It won't be this season. But the only thing with Dallas is I just wish they had better decision makers. I wish Jerry Jones wasn't the guy in charge of everything. I wish Mike McCarthy wasn't the CEO coach of everything. But this offense is a lot of fun pieces. And if Tony Pollard's going to get used this much, I mean, Tony Pollard got 21 touches in a game where Zeke was involved, and they actually rested guys late. So it's I don't think any Tony Pollard manager needs us to hold their hand, but he could be a league winner. He could be the guy that you took in the 6th round who it's like, okay, thank God I had Tony Pollard. Other people carried me before Dallas really stepped into Pollard. But, I mean, he's got to be a top 10 running back the rest of the way, right?
I think so. I think, well, I don't know. It's kind of tough to say because like, there's guys like Ramondre Stevenson sniffing on the edge of that. You know, there's Travis Etienne. Like, it's actually
I would take Pollard over Stevenson immediately. I wouldn't even hesitate towards that, no. Because you're getting tied to a better offense. I mean, the Patriots, man, we'll get to them. I mean,
yeah.
Huffing and puffing. They scored 3 points on offense today, and they won.
No, I totally
Mac
hear you.
Mac Jones is, you know, I never was in love with Mac Jones, but I thought he was at least going to be like Andy Dalton solid. Mac Jones looks like he is. Today he was efficient. I shouldn't talk too much about that game. We'll get to it later. But
yeah, we'll get
when it comes to Stevenson versus Pollard, the reason why I'm taking Pollard is not only do I think Pollard's a better player right now, but he's tied to such a better situation. The infrastructure around Pollard is so much better. Plus the Patriots lost the alignment today too. So when you're close, you know, when you're close in running back, you're trying to rank them and everything, you have to project the game script. You have to say, well, who's got the better support around them? The problem has always been with Pollard is that you never knew when Dallas might say, oh, it's a 9-touch Tony Pollard game. It's an 11-touch Tony Pollard game. We can't take the touches away from Zeke. I think they've finally seen the light. I think it's finally 50-50 or maybe even kind of a hot hand thing. It's no restrictions. Again, this is all kind of stating the obvious. To me, there are no restrictions left on Tony Pollard. He is plug and play, and thank God you should be giving your thanks while you're eating that turkey and watching Dallas in the second game on Thursday. You should be giving your thanks that for all the bad picks you made, you also took Tony Pollard in like the 5th or 6th round.
I think you're moving me here a little bit, man. I might be on your side of the Tony Pollard Stevenson thing just after hearing you say that. And, you know, I think your last point there is the best one, which is I think Dallas, and I'll give Mike McCarthy and the boys credit for this. Like Jerry can say whatever he wants. And I'm sure like I honestly feel bad for Mike McCarthy because it's got to be such like a pain in the ass thing where, you know, Tony Pollard has that big game against the Bears. And then, you know, right afterwards in the locker room, the owner is out there saying, oh, yeah, well, we go as Zeke goes. Like, I mean, making personnel calls, like that's got to be so irritating. But like this is one of those things where I would say to people, like, don't even, and I know fantasy Twitter can't help itself because this like Tony Pollard versus Zeke thing has been like a long time, you know, little cutesy debate or whatever it is on fantasy Twitter. Like, but I'll, like, don't even wait, like, don't even waste Earth seconds talking about it. Don't even waste Earth seconds thinking about it. Like, Zeke's going to get his work and that's going to happen. Sure. But like, I'm totally with you that Pollard has a legit role. I think they've seen the light on it and I don't think it's changing. And he's a crucial piece for them. And this was like, my preseason analysis on Pollard was that they needed him to be this guy in the passing game. Six catches on six targets for over 100 yards and those two touchdowns, like making huge plays, because outside of CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup is maybe at like 70% of his normal self, and they just don't have a lot of juice beyond that. Pollard verifiably gives them juice.
Also, Zeke, and all like Barkley, a guy who came into the league with a good reputation as a pass catcher who's been very ordinary in that area, they should not be throwing the ball to Elliott much, and he only had one target today.
Yep.
That's actually optimal usage. Let Zeke pound between the tackles, sure, but Zeke shouldn't be targeted 4 to 6 to 7 times a game, and I think they're moving away from that.
I think so, too. And just last thing on this, and I won't keep going on and on about this because it does kind of drive me nuts. Like, there was a clip going around the other day of like from the NFL, like throwback or whatever. One of those accounts that like it was an old Ezekiel Elliott run. And like a bunch of people I follow like, man, Prime Zeke was so good. It's like, yeah, Prime Zeke was so good. Like, have a little respect for these guys as they age. Like, we don't have to completely say Zeke is trash at this point. He's just not what he used to be. And that's fine. Now the shift goes over to Pollard there. So, yeah, I don't know. It like derating guys for being washed or old or whatever when they used to be these great players, it does kind of grind my gears a little bit. Not to be like the old man get off my lawn thing, but I don't know, have a little respect for these guys.
I agree. I wouldn't mind if we got rid of the word washed. You know, David Johnson used to be a dynamite football player. Le'Veon Bell used to be a dynamite football player. Shady McCoy used to be a dynamite football player. And unfortunately, the way most guys' careers end, especially at the running back position, is like, you know, some year where they average 2.9 yards a carry and they basically have to rip the jersey off their back. And they pay a price. And then you see the quality of life some of these guys have. You know, I think it's somebody from my childhood, Earl Campbell, who just ran over guys. And there are unbelievable Earl Campbell highlights, Hall of Famer. And you know, now he's a guy, I think he's in a wheelchair. If he's not, he's walking with a cane. He's walking very compromised. That's a lot of NFL players. I would say the majority of NFL players are having some compromise of life for the price they pay as gladiators. And I think we lose that humanity angle sometimes. And I think you're very wise to point it out. You know, I know we're in it for the numbers and everything, but these are human beings who are paying unbelievable prices with their life expectancy and with the pain they're going to have to tolerate for the rest of their lives. And, you know, let's try to be mindful and, you know, have some empathy for that.
Yeah. And even just from like a cold-hearted brass tacks like standpoint, you've like been playing fantasy football for a while. You got great days from Zeke. Like, you know, everybody can't wait to call Allen Robinson washed, and like he's given you great years, you know, before too. So I don't know, just have a little damn respect for what these guys have been before. We'll transition away from that before I really get on my high horse, which I don't want to do. Falcons 27, Bears 24. Unfortunately, you know what you just said about guys taking a bunch of punishment, that's my thought coming out of this game for Justin Fields, which, man, Justin Fields, like, since they transitioned the offense to him, it's been so electric. It's been so fun. He has 18 carries in this game. That's more than David Montgomery after he got, you know, the work all transitioned to him with Khalil Herbert out. And, you know, just, I don't know, you know, Fields comes out of this game, like, rocking his shoulder back and forth, getting an x-ray, you know, carted after the game just to get his shoulder checked out right away. And you know, Scott, normally I'm not the guy who's like, oh, rushing quarterbacks are going to get hurt more often, but I think it's objectively true that Justin Fields, number one, has not really mastered the art of like avoiding big hits as a rusher. And number two, it's more problematic for him than most guys because he takes an absurd amount of punishment in the pocket because of how often he takes sacks. And a lot of those plays are on him as well. So I don't know, Scott, I don't want to have any bad vibes with Justin Fields, but man, am I worrying too much about what we saw in this game against the Falcons and just specifically with the injuries? And it's not just the shoulder either. It looked like it was multiple things going on with him later in that game.
I think you're outlining the thing that everybody should be concerned about, is that how sustainable of a business model is it for the Bears to run Fields as proactively? It's a catch 22 because your best thing offensively is probably Fields running, but you can't use him as a running back and expose him to this much punishment It's funny, the Bears have played five games in a row, have all been very similar. They've been high-scoring games, they've been entertaining games, they've been fantasy-friendly games. The Bears have found a way to lose the majority of them. We're starting to see sprinkling of value in his pass catchers. Kmet didn't score a touchdown today, but he was active. Darnell Mooney got in the end zone and was liberally grabbed and held by the Falcons pretty much all day. I feel like Darnell Mooney can always get open and Falcons get away with some contact today. But what is the sweet spot, right? We don't want to go back to Fields only running three or four times or five times. I mean, it's fine to have some design runs for him, but you don't want him running 18 times a game. I mean, you may, in a playoff game maybe where it's like win or go home, you might say screw it, just we'll live with it. If he gets hurt, he has all offseason to get right. But you can't play a full season where your quarterback would run the ball like 200 plus times. It just doesn't make any sense. So the hope is that Fields becomes more proficient and more skilled as a pocket passer. The hope is that maybe Claypool spreads his wings next year. Maybe they add a receiver in the draft or in free agency. We all didn't like this Chicago offensive line coming to the season. We didn't really trust their skill talent. So we hope they can make improvements there. A healthy Fields, or even just an active Fields, because maybe he might not be healthy the rest of the season. We'll see what that left shoulder shows when they do the extra medical attention to it. But he's the top five player on the field because his running is so dynamic, but they're going to have to find what the happy medium is, because right now they're using him too much as a runner. I get it. They're trying to win football games, but they can't play like that indefinitely because that's where an injury is going to happen. He's just getting hit too much.
18 carries overall, only six of them were scrambles. So that's, you know, the vast, vast majority are designed rushes. And yeah, I don't want to be like one of these hacks that's like constantly criticizing the coaching staff or whatever, because I was so celebratory for them, like during that sort of mini bye after that Commanders game on Thursday night, changing what they did on offense. But you're so right to say it's finding the happy medium. And that's just like what happens in a season for a first time coaching staff that's making its way with this younger player who's developing. Like, it's the push and pull of it. I think they've pushed too hard to the other end with Fields as a designed rusher. So they pull that back a little bit. They can find the happy medium. And it's all good. It's all good things for the Bears that they have to even have this discussion, because there was a point early in the year, Scott, where it was like, do they have to move on from Justin Fields? Like, is this just straight up not going to work? And now it's clearly working, but they have to find the exact right balance of it. And I think they can get that done, you know, especially because Fields was just, even after the game, was talking about how bad like his shoulder was hurting. And like I said, he was rolling that thing out constantly towards the end of the game. So I'm sure he'll want to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm really glad Chicago's not on the Thanksgiving schedule. It feels like Chicago and Detroit is one of those Thanksgiving staples that they serve a lot. I'm glad we don't have that. On the Atlanta side, man, they're just so difficult. They have three players in Algier, Patterson, and Mariota who could all get double-digit touches in any week. And you know what? This week, Algier gets 8, Patterson gets 10, Mariota gets 13. Mariota gets the rushing touchdown. Patterson bails out his day with that electric kickoff return. And what a fun. Yeah, I feel like if Patterson was used differently for the majority of his career, he could have had a much better career. I know he's played for like 27 different teams, but it's just fun to watch him playing good football again. Even though he didn't have the greatest fantasy day today, it was bailed out by that kickoff return. But look at the passing game. There's never anybody who's guaranteed a bunch of targets. Pitts leads them today with 5, 3 for 43 and, you know, 0, which for all I know may make him tight at 9 or 10. The position is ugly as hell, but and that's the
got
one
hurt
guy
in
they,
this game too. Got a knee injury. We'll see what happens there.
Yep. Took the shot to the knee. You know, Drake London's hardly used. He catches a short touchdown, but even then he doesn't make it to double digit points. The target tree is as big as the phone book. They still don't trust Mariota. At least Mariota wasn't sacked in this game. He's one of those guys who I always feel like has 4 or 5 sacks in him the moment he comes off the bus. Man, I don't, the Falcons are frustrating to me. They won. Good for them. There are interesting players on this team. I just feel the usage is so spread out that I don't think we can play anybody. And this is, I'm somebody who wanted to play Patterson proactively when he came back. I know the first game he didn't get the greatest market share, but he had a couple of touchdowns. I'm like, well, he looks like he's healthy. Maybe he can just kind of push everybody to a back seat. I don't think there's a back seat here. I think everybody's potentially the front seat runner. And today, you know, both quarterbacks were the teams that led their teams in rushing attempts. Although I'm sure some of them were Mariota kneel downs, but still, it's just, when you have to add a mobile quarterback, a running quarterback into a backfield that has multiple running backs who touch the ball every week, that's just too many mouths to feed, man. It's just really, really difficult. So the Falcons are going to be one of these playoff teams. I think they'll sneak into the playoffs, probably as a 7 seed, and they have almost no fantasy juice.
Yeah, they're one of those passing games that can just really gives your projection model the bird, right? And I mean that literally, because Damier Bird ends up being the guy that, like, hey, the Damier Bird plays are good, right? Yeah. Like, when they throw him the ball, good things tend to happen. He had the a really bird. Nice 19. Yeah, he had a really nice 19-yard catch against his former team, the Chicago Bears. He played for, like, a bunch of teams. But, you know, we go into the season like, oh, wow, they've got Drake London. They've got Kyle Pitts. Like, who else are they going to throw to? Split the, like 50% of the targets just to those guys. And, you know, and I think this is a credit to Arthur Smith. I know people hate when I praise Arthur Smith because he's, you know, made some boneheaded decisions along the way. He's a cantankerous guy. And, like, we've definitely not getting the best out of these guys like Pitts and London. But, like I said, those Damier Bird plays are good. And they just happen to go to that guy instead of one of the stars. Like, it's just one of those situations where sometimes our projection models can tell us, like, oh yeah, these guys are just going to be so concentrated, and it's not the case. Although we can transition here to a team, Scott, in the Eagles, where that is the case. You know, Philadelphia has been extremely highly concentrated between their three guys in the passing game: AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. In this game, Devontae Smith, 9 targets, AJ Brown, 7 targets. But I mean, it certainly seemed like they were missing Dallas Goedert in this game. He had been a big part of their screen package, and those plays were certainly missing against the Colts in a game they barely squeaked out.
Yeah, lucky to win. And I miss Goddard so much. And he fit. We've always talked about how Smith, Brown, and Goddard complement each other so well, and it threatens every strata of the field. And I'm not surprised that Philadelphia struggled. I didn't think it would be this much of a struggle. It was Philadelphia's probably the worst offensive game of the year. They squeak out the win at the end, in part because Matt Ryan couldn't lead the Colts to a winning touchdown. But at least, look, it's the four amigos now, right? It's Hurts, again, probably running the ball too much. But, I mean, they needed – those were do-or-die plays down the stretch. And so they said, the heck with it. We're going to do a lot of design runs with Hurts. Miles Sanders, you've got 13 carries. Smith and Brown were involved. Just a kind of a fluke that Quez Watson scored a touchdown. Although, you know, he actually didn't look that bad in the Monday game either. He may be somebody, if you're struggling, again, because receiver can be really ugly. There's a lot of injuries out there. Bye weeks are still coming. Maybe Quez Watkins could be one of those guys you squint and you can imagine himself as like wide receiver 39 or wide receiver 41 or something like that. But Eagles are still well coached. Despite that Nick Sirianni fourth down call, just burned a timeout at the end of the game. I don't know the heck what that was. It was obvious they weren't going to snap it, but they're still well coached. Hurts has taken a major step up as a passer. They still have a dangerous passing game, even though Goddard's a huge loss, and they have maybe the best offensive line in football. So somebody's going to pay for the slump that they've been in. And even though I think they're certainly a much better team with Goddard, at least the distribution is a lot more narrow now. So maybe it makes you play Sanders more confidently. Maybe it makes you play Devonta Smith, who was their target leader today, more confidently.
Yeah, certainly. And hey, on the other side of this, the Fight and Jeff Saturday suffer their first loss here. But man, I mean, just from a pure fantasy angle, is this not the team that we wanted coming into the year? You know, they're competitive, they're feisty. Jonathan Taylor gets 22 carries for 84 yards and a touchdown. He did lose a fumble in this game. And in the passing game, you know, Alec Pierce is the target leader. He only gets 3 catches on 28 yards. That's kind of the up and down experience of Alec Pierce. But, you know, Michael Pittman, respectable 6 catches for 75 yards. Paris Campbell, respectable 5 catch game. You know, and Jonathan Taylor also catches 3 passes as well. So, like, from a fantasy angle, Jeff Saturday has sort of made this team back into the team that we thought we were getting heading into the season.
I give Ryan some credit for that, too. You know, one of my critiques of Ryan early in the season was that he was throwing so much between the numbers to his tight ends. And that's, he didn't do any of that. It was all about the receivers today. Pittman with a good game. You know, Campbell beats his receiving prop, and he dropped one pass that probably would have been a 15-yard catch. So he left a little bit on the bone. I still think Alec Pierce is a good player and was a steal in where they got him in the draft. So I'm just excited to see this offense pressing the ball to people who can make dynamic plays, you know, because they have 3 tight ends, and they all have different skill sets and all that. But it's not, you're not going to win games, you know, with Grandson. As much as I've liked Mo Alie-Cox in the past, I've just given up the idea of him ever becoming special. It's just too late in the story for that. But Matt Ryan has made this a respectable offense again. It's about the receivers again. It's about Jonathan Taylor again. The Colts, I thought, for a decent chunk of this game were the better team. Maybe they should have won. They certainly could have won. Maybe they should have won. The cover was never in doubt. And in a year, Matt, where there's been so many offenses, we talked a little bit about this last week, you know, with at times the Packers offense was on probation and the Colts offense was on probation. And it's just nice to have the Colts. I can look at their offense again and say, oh yeah, there's three or four guys I want to play here, where it was basically, it was down to one. When Ellinger was playing quarterback, I thought all of their receivers were unplayable. And I love Michael Pittman, and I like Paris Campbell, and I like Alec Pierce. You know, again, I'm a little bit disappointing with the opportunities he had today, but those guys are all in play now because Matt Ryan is at least somewhat competent and Sam Ellinger wasn't. And maybe they broomed out some coaches who'd gotten a little bit stale at the right time. I mean, I still think Frank Reich will land on his feet and be a good coordinator somewhere, maybe even a head coach someday. But you know, they needed, look, we all know Jim Irsay is to steal the Evan Silva line. He's kind of on tilt right now, and he's going, you know, a little bit off the rails and bouncing over, you know, against the walls at the moment. But you know, maybe they needed a kick in the pants at the right time. Good win last week where they were easily the best team against the Raiders, whatever that means. And then they gave Philadelphia a good team. Everybody knows Philadelphia is a good team. And I thought the Colts were the better team for 2.5 hours. So it's just nice to have Indianapolis back. Are they a destination fantasy spot? Do we expect them to put up 30 a week? No. But they have multiple guys we want to play again. And that's all I'm asking for.
Yeah, that's all we're asking for. And hey, the one thing we can say for sure about Jim Irsay, whether he is smart about what he's doing, I'm sure he won't be taking any Twitter victory laps this week after this game. You know, even though they take a really good team down to the wire there, they're not trying to lose games. That's one thing. They're not tanking. They're in this thing to win, whatever that might look like. The Bills-Browns game probably looked a little bit different than most people expected. Certainly a different setting as it ended up being in Detroit. Scott, what do you got from this one?
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett outplays Josh Allen, right? Jacoby Brissett looks like the MVP candidate. Josh Allen has his worst fantasy game of the year. My friend Mark Stopa was at this game. He's a big Buffalo fan who lives in the Florida area and was willing to brave the travel and travel to, you know, to frigid Detroit to watch this game. And he actually wanted to stay for the Thanksgiving game, but I don't think he could sell it with his son, which is too bad because it would have been a fun trip to stay in Detroit if you're a Buffalo fan for like 5 days and watch your team twice.
Yeah, right.
Probably watch a couple of wins. He thought that maybe Allen was a little bit tentative in the first half. Allen came into this game leading the NFL in interceptions. You know, famously had that fumble botched exchange that cost them the game against Minnesota. He had some problems in the red zone. That game against Minnesota ended with an Allen interception. And so even the best players, you're human. Sometimes you overcorrect. You're like, oh, okay, I'm giving the ball away. Turnovers lose games. And maybe Allen was afraid to let it rip in the first half. But then they get the late touch on the digs at the end of the first half. The second half, they control things. We know that the Bills tend to rely on Devin Singletary when they get some pushback from the opponent. This was one of those games. Singletary gets 20 touches. He gets into the end zone. Cook did pretty good in mop-up territory. But, you know, Allen's worst fantasy game of the year. Doesn't get to 200 yards. Only carries 3 times for 7 yards, which is just so rare for him. And Jacoby Brissett, man, this is one of these things. We'll laugh about the fact that this game happened, but against the defense we all respect, throws for 324 and 3. This whole story that Amari Cooper can't trust him on the road. He goes bonkers.
Neutral site though. Different than a home game. Neutral site game, Scott. Okay. I mean, can't wait to break those splits down.
I'm just happy to see Donovan Peoples Jones score a touchdown too, because he hadn't scored all season. But yeah. I felt like the 5 for 61 was probably what you would have projected Peoples Jones to do, but you'd be like, well, he'll never score a touchdown. But he gets the late touchdown and Ben, you're living right. If you had Cleveland +8, man, you got a gift push. They could have gone for 2 and gone for the win, but they took the push. Kind of a bad beat for Buffalo. You know, Josh Allen, look, you're never going to bench him. If you drafted Josh Allen, you probably don't have a contingency plan because why would you need one? But I don't know. His confidence right now, I think he's a little bit shaken. He didn't want to run the ball today. Now, granted, Buffalo at least did something I've been screaming for all year. When the game's out of hand, don't run Josh Allen anymore.
Yeah,
there's no reason for it. Now, you mentioned how Detroit's running defense has been better in recent weeks. They're still a team you can throw on. Obviously, Daniel Jones did that. Buffalo will stay here and play Detroit on Thursday. So this may be one of these things where it's like, okay, in the first half, Allen has 3 touchdowns. And then somebody tweets out, oh, yeah, that buy low window on Josh Allen has been slammed shut. I don't think there's any buy low window on Josh Allen. But he does look like a guy who's struggling with his confidence, which in the ebb and flow of a 4-month season, of an 18-week season that's going to happen, it's just frustrating that if you needed Josh Allen today, he gave you his worst fantasy game of the year.
Yeah, one thing we know for sure is that Josh Allen's been really hard on himself through some of these struggles. Like, I think it was after the Jets game where they lost. And, you know, that wasn't even as bad as the game against the Vikings where he had some pretty rough moments. But after that game, he's like, yeah, hard to win when your quarterback plays like Like, that was the direct quote. So he's been pretty hard on himself through this little slump. So I could see that, like, maybe the confidence is not 100% there. But, hey, you go ahead and beat the Lions in Detroit, like, on Thanksgiving. You can get that confidence back. I also think, like, shout out to the Bills. Just, they're such a throw-happy team. But they stuck with Devin Singletary in this game. And everybody can run on the Browns. I mean, it's one of the most hilariously bad run defenses in the NFL. Even James Cook has a nice little outing, 11 carries, 80 plus yards on the ground. So, you know, credit to the Bills, like, just sticking with what was working. And, you know, eventually the passing game got there. You know, at one point, I think it was in the first half, like, Steph Diggs didn't have any targets. And then, like, he got, you know, four out of five targets and, you know, scores a touchdown. So eventually it got there. But yeah, I agree with you that overall the Bills could use a little bit of an injection of confidence right now. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will run through the rest of the games here in week 11. All right, next game here, AFC North matchup, a little bit more entertaining, a little bit of a higher score perhaps than we were expecting. Bengals 37, Steelers 30. Scott, I don't actually come away from this game feeling any better about the Steelers offense in this one. A couple opportunistic moments, two interceptions from their defense. But yeah, I mean, this game, again, a little higher scoring than we expected, but I don't really feel differently about either of these two teams than I did coming into it.
That's interesting because, you know, Freiermuth, 12 targets, 8 catches. There's always been a narrative that he could inherit some of the stuff that Claypool vacated. And I think we saw some of that today. Pickens scores a touchdown. Najee Harris looked good. And I have not trusted Najee Harris for several weeks. He gets over 100 total yards and a couple of touchdowns. I still don't think Pickett has played particularly well. I mean, he played a mediocre game today. It's a step up from his previous play. But, man, it just seems like it takes a lot for the Steelers to get the 30 points. As you said, a lot of that was influenced by defense. But my challenge to you, dear listener, is if you somehow missed this game, and I told you that Joe Burrow went for 355 and 4, guess where it went? We're all going to laugh.
Oh,
about the Samaje
yeah.
Perine, you know, 3 touchdowns receiving game. Obviously, Mixon was going nowhere and then get hurt in this game. He was in for a rough day anyway. I thought his rushing prop was way too high, and Pittsburgh was likely to focus on him and take him out of the game, which they did. But, you know, Higgins went ballistic, didn't get the touchdowns, but whatever. Burrow was in fine form, and I mean, he's hoping that Ja'Marr Chase can come back 100% because I think the Bengals could be really dangerous and a fun team. The story most of the time with the Bengals is, oh, yeah, narrow usage, narrow targets, narrow distribution. We know where their touchdowns are going. This is one week where, yeah, I mean, Trenton Irwin, I know nothing about him. I just know he scored a touchdown today. He plays for the Cincinnati Bengals, and he was started on nobody's fantasy team. I've never thought P. Ryan had any special qualities. The main attraction to P. Ryan for fantasy is just as a backup for Mixon. We'll see how hurt Mixon is. I don't think Travion Williams would be a threat to P. Ryan's touch equity going forward if Mixon needs to miss time. I think I was a little bit more encouraged in Pickens and Freiermuth than you. I granted, they're tied to Pickett, and he's such a work in progress. If he took a step forward today, it was a baby step. But, man, yeah. Freiermuth got 12 targets. I mean, at a tight end year where so many things are going wrong, and he's stepping into a lot of that Claypool stuff, I actually think Pat Freiermuth could be a set-forget tight end the rest of the season.
No, yeah, I agree with you about that. I think that's the best we're getting out of this, though. You know, George Pickens, he gets 4 for 83 in the touchdown. He lets a late one slip right out of his hands, you know, that he could have just walked in for another score. You know, there's mistakes from Pickens. There's mistakes from Johnson. And then the quarterback play is just so miserable. Like you said, if Pickett took a step forward today, it wasn't much. I just don't feel very encouraged by this. And yeah, I think the big story is obviously we'll see what happens with Joe Mixon. He had a concussion in this game, and you know, Samaje Perine was going to have that eruption game anyways. He was walking towards that even before the Joe Mixon game, which or Joe Mixon injury, which I mean, what a wild development. But this is
it's
the thing,
so
right?
Funny, like, right? Mixon gets the 5 touchdowns the previous week, and then it's Perine, the game out of the bye, who gets the 3. I mean, who could have seen that coming? Let me ask you this. Every week, I feel like I move Deontay Johnson down a little bit more and down a little bit more and down a little bit more. Is it just finally time that we move him down low enough? There's like, don't even ask me anymore. Forget it. I'm not answering start sit questions with Deontay Johnson. Just you can't even think about him.
Yeah, I thought this was a decent spot for Johnson. And, you know, again, not much there. And I, like I said, I'm not encouraged about like George Pickens coming out of this game either. I mean, I know he makes a couple of big plays, but you know, he leaves plays on the field too. And like the Steelers offense is just like the margin for error is so, so thin that if he gives you 3 for 24, I wouldn't be surprised either. So I just don't want to, like I said, I do not want to get my hopes up about this offense at all, but that is like my bias about the way I think about the Matt Canada offense, but I think I'm right about it. So that's where we're at. Next game up here. Not an exciting contest. Raiders 22, Broncos 16. I mean, the Broncos, 16 points. They turn over play calling duties to Clint Kubiak. Who cares? Once again, they would have won this game if they could score 18 freaking points in regulation. You know, at one point I heard the, I think it was Mark Schlereth and I can't remember the other guy that he calls the games with, but at one point, this is probably Russell Wilson's best game as a passer with the Denver Broncos. I'm like, this is the best game? I mean, that's a sad statement all in itself.
Yeah, I want to point out that on the script, I think you skipped the Rams-Saints game, and if we're going to skip that game entirely, I don't think anybody's going to complain about it.
I'll go back to it after
yeah,
this.
Yeah, just a point in fact that producer Lord Podcast John can decide if he wants Rams and Saints talk. I think maybe Sean
I'll
McVay,
go back for it.
Has Sean McVay dropped a dime and said that, hey, just keep the Rams on a low profile here. We don't really need to talk about Tutu Atwell. Nobody needs to know about Cam Akers. Yeah, this Raiders-Broncos game, you know, I very seldom give out totals, but when I saw this total was 41.5, I'm like, lots of luck. Even with an overtime touchdown, they never scared that number. And you know, Wilson, no touchdowns out of Wilson. He's not running at all. He only has one carry. They spread the backfield work with different guys. You know, Sutton had a decent game. You know, Dulcich is going to be playable at tight end because tight end's so ugly. The Broncos, it's so depressing to watch them because they keep the other team down more or less. And granted, they didn't stop the main Raider guys. I mean, Jacobs was running wild and Davante Adams. Was it acute when people were down on Davante Adams for like a minute? I don't think there was ever really a buy-low window. But it's
The buy-low window? When was it open?
He was sick in New Orleans and did nothing. And people were like, oh, wow, you know, Davante Adams looked like a big mistake. And since then, all he's done is go crazy. He had that one second half where they forgot to throw the ball to him and he called out McDaniels. And you know, since then, Davante Adams has done Davante Adams things. I think he's winning the breakup between him and Aaron Rodgers. Not that it was acrimonious. I mean, you know, Adams wanted to get paid. He wanted to play with Derek Carr, and you know, that's going fine. But I think if you cancel the rest of the Denver Broncos season, nobody would mind. And the only thing worse than watching the Denver Broncos is this team seems to play an overtime game every other week. I got to watch more Denver Broncos football. At least the Raiders had the decency to win the toss and go right down and score. So I didn't have to watch Russell Wilson go back in the pocket, not find anybody and throw a ground ball to, you know, to Kendall Hinton or something like that. I just didn't have the stomach for any more of that. Man, there's nothing in Denver. Yeah, look, Murray's going to get probably double-digit touches next week and maybe some goal-line equity. Sutton's a good player. You play him. You have to play Dulcich. But it's like, here, fight over the one touchdown you're going to score. Fight over the 16 points you're going to score. And your defense is so good, you'll never get pushed into a shootout. It's a fantasy wasteland, man.
Yeah, I would argue that the only thing more depressing than watching the Denver Broncos and even more depressing than the fact that they go to overtime is thinking about where the hell do they go from here next year, man. I mean, that is an ultra depressing thing to consider. And yeah, Davante Adams, awesome in this game. His walk-off touchdown, Scott, has to go into like, how the hell did you let that guy get that wide open Hall of Fame? I know like it was disgusting.
You had one job to do, not get beaten by Davante Adams.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying just left him open or anything. Sertan was trying to cover him, but
I know. Who's a great player, yeah.
He's a great player, yeah, but Davante Adams is an equally great player. Yeah, just unfortunately.
Secondary bust, it happens. I mean, yeah, and it's hard. A lot of times it's hard for us to know, right? It could be a communication error. It could be, you know, somebody was responsible for part of the field and fell down or didn't, you know, understand the call or something like that. Sometimes the guy
just a great player making a great play, man.
Of course, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm encouraged. At least Carr looked a little bit more like the Derek Carr I thought we were getting. He hasn't like torpedoed your season. He's been shielded because Wilson's been so bad and Stafford's been so bad. Rodgers been such a disappointment. And we could list a bunch of different guys. Carr's been a little bit shielded from that. It was just nice to see Derek Carr. Look, I'm just looking for circle of trust guys. And I mean, they can be 1 foot into the circle of trust. At least Derek Carr, because Adams is playing so well right now, that I can play Derek Carr with a level of confidence. That's all I'm looking for. I never asked him to win me a league. I just want him to be like quarterback 11 or quarterback 13 or something like that. I think he's back in that mix.
Yep. The Raiders' future will certainly be an interesting one to discuss, but that is for a later podcast.
What? How do they get out of the McDaniels thing? I guess they got to hope he's so miserable he's willing to give a lot of the money back, because there's no way that contract's getting. I know they don't have the money just to walk away from him now, but there's no way that marriage is going the distance.
No, and they'll probably, and like, if I had to bet right now who's a member of the 2023 Raiders, I would bet that it's Josh McDaniels over Derek Carr.
And over Carr, yeah.
I'm not 100% sure how I feel about that, but again, that's a podcast for another time.
We're going to start playing a parlor game. I didn't force it yet, but would this offense be better with Gardner Minshew? Because I feel like a lot of the NFL teams would be. There's one game, in fact, is the Gardner Minshew needs to come here special. We'll get to it. It's one of the last games on the rundown. But
yeah, unfortunately, we will have to get to that game. Scott, we also unfortunately do have to double back for Saints Rams. The Rams were on the no fly list after the Cooper Kupp injury for me. And then we continue to get Matthew Stafford injured. He leaves this game with a concussion. It's his second in a pretty short period of time. We know he missed week 10 with a concussion. You can now add Bryce Perkins, because John Wolford, the guy who backed up Matthew Stafford and had to start against the Cardinals last week, he was injured for this game. You can now add Bryce Perkins to the long list, the long Browns-like jersey of quarterbacks who have played with Allen Robinson, right? I mean, Allen Robinson gets a touchdown in this game. Tutu Atwell got a touchdown in this game. But, like, I mean, Bryce Perkins, bro, like, what are we doing here with the Rams? This season is slipping away so fast from this team, and I think it's already well through the grasp.
It's not even slipping away. I mean, the ice cream cone's on the ground, and there's a bunch of ants on it. It's done. It's over. Cam Akers get a bunch of opportunity. Really went nowhere with it. The offensive line play has not been good. Atwell makes one long touchdown catch, but there's no way he's playable. I thought Ben Skowronek might have done something today. He has four targets, does absolutely nothing with it. Is that the point now? I'm just happy to see Allen Robinson make a good football play. It's like, oh, that's cool. Allen Robinson scored, you know? It's like in Little League when somebody plays like the last two innings and gets a hit. It's like, oh, that's cool. Billy get a hit, you know? I don't mean to sound condescending. I was totally that kid.
I was that kid.
So. I mean, Allen Robinson was such a good player for such a long time, and he's had so much bad luck. And then finally, you think, I mean, Stafford get out of Detroit at the right time. He wins Super Bowl. You think maybe Robinson's finally landing in a good infrastructure, and there's so much wrong with this team right now. Look, they won the championship. Flags fly forever. Banners hang forever. It's worth it because they won. But they're so far away from fixing this. And I realize NFL teams don't take that long to fix. You only need to be right on a few things. But you can't be right in the draft if you have no picks. I don't know what McVay's going to do. I don't know what works on this offense. I do the quarterly fantasy power rankings. I don't know where I had the Rams to begin the season. I'm sure it was a digit, you know, 5 or 4 or 6 or something like that. You could make a case. This could be the worst team in fantasy right now. This could be the deadest fantasy roster in the NFL. Think about that. They won the Super Bowl last year.
It's a good case. It's a very good case that the Rams might be the deadest team in fantasy, especially obviously without Cooper Kupp.
You want a good prediction, Matt? I know this guy, some fantasy hack, who his prediction was Andy Dalton. Shaky ground, almost didn't get the start this week, right? Well, maybe he'll come out cold, make a mistake, and Jameis Winston will play. And this fantasy hack was exciting because, oh, you know, Jameis Winston, get Chris Olave going, right? Maybe the Saints will be a little bit more downfield, chucking the ball and everything. Well, Andy Dalton looked just fine, 21-25, 3 touchdowns, over 10 yards an attempt. We know Chris Olave's great. We talked about Olave last week about, you know, who is the number one receiver in this class, and Olave certainly made a strong case. While some other guys today weren't making strong cases. I mean, Olave's quarterback proof, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, Andy Dalton marked his territory, the Jameis Winston prediction, which of course was my prediction. It was a bold prediction. I thought he was worth stashing in your super flex leagues. You can now, of course, cut him for something else of your choosing. And in a lot of leagues, you can do it on Monday morning. So look at some of the teams that don't play this week. But I guess Dalton's good enough. I guess Olave's quarterback proof. Juwan Johnson very quietly he's got a little bit of that Cole Kmet thing going where he's not getting a ton of opportunity, but he's scoring bushels of touchdowns. And we're so scraping for tight end production that when a guy is scoring as often as Juwan Johnson, in fact, I didn't play him. I think I forgot that I had him or I won a bid on him. And I ended up playing the Arizona rookie tight end instead. And yeah, I don't think it's going to cost me my game, but that feels kind of stupid because Juwan Johnson, I feel, has already earned his way into that tight end 12 conversation. But, you know, if Alvin Kamara didn't have that one huge game, would this just be going down as a huge disappointment for him? I feel like he did all of his scoring in 1 week. And then otherwise, I know it's been a little bit unlucky with the touchdown stuff, but Alvin Kamara's not losing your season by any means, but I'd be worried about him. He's got a very difficult schedule going forward as well.
Yeah, and this offense is just like, with Andy Dalton, it just is what it is. And I think that the fascination with Jameis Winston outweighs the like actual output or the benefits of Jameis Winston. I mean,
fair.
Like, what do we want with Jameis Winston? We want him to unlock Chris Olave deep, but it's like, we got a deep touchdown out of Chris Olave this week. Like, I don't know. I just find the projection with Andy Dalton a little cleaner, but I do think that overall, like, and again, I don't know that Andy Dalton, the benefit for Alvin Kamara is all that great either. So like, to me, it's just the Saints quarterback situation is what it is. And I agree with you that Chris Olave is the big guy here and he is quarterback proof. The fact that he is so good as a technician, but also so fast that like he just gets behind Jalen Ramsey like that. And he has that speed. It's just unfair. What a good player he is.
I want to say also about Winston, part of my thinking was that if the Saints were to lose this game to the Rams or get behind in this game, they have to at some point look that Winston is 7 years younger than Dalton. They can't have a hit. They can't have
and
a
under contract for next year. Under right. contract for next
they
year.
They can't have a future with Dalton. Maybe they could have a future with Winston. The problem is they probably don't have a future with either guy. But
yeah,
that was part of my thinking as well. But now the Saints are probably thinking it's the NFC is so top heavy, and there's going to be some mediocre teams who get into the playoffs. We haven't even gotten into all of them yet, so the Saints have to think, hey, why not us? Why can't we win the NFC South? Or why can't we be the sixth or the seventh seed in a watered-down conference?
Yeah, it feels like a decision they've already made, like the Jameis Winston one, which is a little curious, but it is what it is. One team who did make a decision about their quarterback situation, Scott, I mean, just transitions for days on this podcast right here. Commanders, the Washington Commanders have decided that Taylor Heinicke is their quarterback until he plays himself out of the job, which, by the way, is certainly possible for ODU's finest, but he is the starter going forward. Ron Rivera said it's as simple as the fact that they've been winning games. Commanders 23, Texans 10. Wasn't the cleanest game from Washington's offense by any means. But man, it was a mess there for Davis Mills and the boys for a long period of time. Nico Collins, me, you, and Dalton were also excited about him. 5 catches, 48 yards, and you felt lucky to get out of it with that.
Right, yeah. Some of that came late in the game. Davis Mills didn't play particularly well. He actually got the running touchdown. Damian Pierce, who I thought was game script proof and Texans stench proof, you know, finally has that 10-carry, 8-yard game. That every back is – look, I mean, a lot of guys didn't do it this week. I mean, Nick Chubb, I don't even think we talked about, had his worst game of the year, one of his worst games of the year. Sometimes that happens. But yeah, at least Washington is just a good reminder of when you can reduce a backfield from 3 to 2, McKissick's out of the way, Gibson becomes playable, Robinson becomes playable. A little bit frustrating that the touchdown on the ground got farmed out to Curtis Samuel, but Logan Thomas was active in this game and was pretty good. I still don't trust Heinicke as far as I can throw him. I still think every other throw he makes looks like a potential pick six. But Commanders are well coached. They play hard for Rivera. They have a pretty good defense, and they're going to be a playoff team. I think they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs, I think. But we have to get used to it. At least for fantasy, they've cleaned up nicely because we got the one back out of the way, and they have a couple of receivers that we can play with some level of confidence.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has come because Taylor Heinicke has been under center. Just the confidence of these guys. And like, look, so if you're a bad quarterback, and I think Taylor Heinicke's a bad quarterback, I think Carson Wentz is a bad quarterback. But like, the one thing you're going to do if you're a bad quarterback, like, just get the ball to your best player or best players. And Heinicke does that better than Wentz. And that's the reason I think they're winning games. I think that's the reason they're going to stick with him. We can move on from this game, though, because there's not much to talk about. And unfortunately, Scott, we've come to the point where we have to talk about Patriots, Jets. 10-3, and the Patriots only get that because they return a punt for a touchdown to end the game, which to me felt like the most fitting way for that game to end, if any way possible.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, the Patriots averaged 9.1 yards per attempt. They averaged 3.8 yards per rush. Zach Wilson was at 3.5 yards per attempt. The Jets were at 2.8 yards per rush. Grant Jones took way too many sacks. Six sacks is not acceptable. But the jury, Zach Wilson can't play, man. This is a team. And I don't think Philadelphia is like in any hurry to get rid of Gardner Minshew, but this is a team that needs the Jets have such great offensive infra- and I know their receivers were frustrated today. They were kind of whining and everything. I think they're just getting sick of Zach Wilson short hopping them and being a beat late with all of his throws and not processing correctly, because they have such good talent on this. Oh, whatever. Belichick got them on a bye. You know, nothing pleases Bill Belichick more than to beat the Jets. Was it like 14 games in a row in the regular season or something like that? But it's not satisfying when nobody scores an offensive touchdown. It's not satisfying when Damian Harris gets in the way of Ramondre Stevenson having fantasy value. It's not satisfying when the Jets receiver, you know, we want to play Garrett Wilson with confidence. He has 12 yards. Maybe you play Tyler Conklin because you needed some tight end help. He had 15 yards. I mean, the Jets' offense was horrible. Like 140 yards of offense or something like that. This game deserved to end in a stupid way. Also, anybody who had the Jets at either +3, which should have been a push, or +3.5, it should have been a win, you lose because of the first punt return touchdown in the league this season. Ugh, even the kickers, man. You know, Nick Folk has been one of the best kickers in the league. It's a really windy day. He, you know, the ball was like a paper cup in a windstorm. I know you and I rewatch a lot of the games. I can't do it. I can't rewatch Zach Wilson. I can't rewatch this football game. Mac Jones, I guess he played a better game, but again, you have to give him some culpability for 6 sacks. Sacks are a quarterback stat as much as they are an offensive line stat, and the Patriots lost to Andrews, who's one of their stalwarts of their offensive line. Two very similar teams. I think they're both well coached. I think they're both excellent on defense. The Jets' defense potentially better than the New England, but they're both top 5, top 6 defenses, and right now neither team has any level of trust in their quarterback.
I come away from this game thinking like there are no excuses for either teams. Like they walked into this year with these situations, and starting on the Patriots side of things, I can't stop thinking about how they really did this Joe Judge, Matt Patricia thing. You know, like Mac Jones wasn't as good as I think the numbers indicated last year, especially in the second half of the season, but this was his crucial second season. And they walked into this year with this unserious offensive play caller situation. And it shows in crucial moments. Like you mentioned, the box score for the Jets is hilariously bad. We'll get to the Jets in a second. Like it is laughably bad. But on the Patriots side of things, like it doesn't look that bad. Mac Jones' stat line doesn't look that bad, but the 6 sacks are there. And they went 3 for 15. On third down. Like it shows up in the red zone. It shows up in situational football moments. And isn't that Bill Belichick's like whole thing, situational football? And this is the situation they walked in with. No excuses for the Patriots on that side of it. And on the Jets, like they're just no excuses for Zach Wilson. He just, like you said, he's just not it right now. 77 passing yards on 22 attempts. That's like, that's hilariously unreal.
The Jets had 103 total yards. I got to look back.
Yeah.
I have to go on Pro Football Reference when we finish this podcast and find the last time an NFL team had 103 total yards in a game. It's got to be way back. And it's probably involved horrible weather. So granted, the wind was bad in this game, but I mean, somehow Mac Jones went 23 of 27. Right. Zach Wilson, I'm giving up, man. I don't think whether it's he needs a fresh start somewhere or he just can't play, Zach Wilson is never going to be the right answer for the Jets. And I realize that sounds all hot takey, because who's banging on the table for Zach Wilson right now? But 6 first downs, 103 yards of offense? This is what you come up with?
Yeah. And not the acceptable. Like the skill position players are good. The skill position players are more than good enough. I know they've had injuries on the offensive line, but everything shouldn't have to be perfect for the quarterback to look average. And he's well below average right now. And just bottom line, Scott, the best, I think the way you encapsulate Zach Wilson this year is he is almost always the reason they lose games. And he is almost never the driving force for when they win games. And like, that's not the answer. And it's a tough situation for the Jets to be in.
You know, Wilson, who does have good athleticism and brings something as a runner, he actually had a higher QBR than Mac Jones, which I would say brings, you know, the worthiness of QBR into the question a little bit, but neither one. Look, bottom line is these teams are so similar in that they play so well defensively and they're so well coached that nobody will ever enjoy playing them. I mean, when the Jets beat the Bills a couple of weeks ago, it didn't feel fluky at all. And obviously Belichick has plenty of scalps and pelts on his wall, and he's won games as an underdog before. But there's just no upside for these offenses as long as they have the quarterback play that's as poor as it is. This was about one of Mac Jones's better days. And by the way, congratulations. You piloted your offense to 3 points. You know, I mean, I hope nobody gave him a game ball or anything for that, because it just So frustrating. Also frustrating to lose a Jacoby Myers under prop that I had. I think I got a 50 and a half. I'm thinking, okay, Windy, Mac Jones, a little Sauce Gardner. No way Jacoby Myers is going over that. Well, he had 4 for 52. So that ticket is officially scrap paper.
Well, that's probably, I would say that's probably the biggest loss in the game. Not the Jets, like, what the F do we do at quarterback? Like, the Patriots, are we seriously rolling with it? Like, that, the biggest loss is that Jacoby Myers prop, Scott. So that's, Matt, what we can really mourn.
I'm being serious when I say this, and you can laugh me off the podcast if you want. Could Mike White really be any worse?
I mean, dude, Joe Flacco, I think, still has
more touchdowns. Could Joe Flacco be any worse?
Boomer Esiason be any worse?
Is Vinny Testaverde in the building? I don't care. Brett Favre want to play anymore? Get me somebody else. I'm sick of Zach freaking Wilson. Get him off my television.
What do you think? Seriously, though, like, do you think it's a situation? Because the Jets are competitive. Like, they can go to the playoffs. Like, do you think at some point they say enough with Zach Wilson? Like, they go back to Joe Flacco? Or is that, like, too much of a, hey, we've completely burned the future, like, and we need to have some hope for this guy? What do you think? Like,
I can see Salah saying, there's an integrity of the locker room. At some point, somebody's playing so poorly for the other guys who are putting themselves out there on the line and, you know, putting their bodies at risk every snap. Yeah. At some point, if you think there's a better quarterback in the room, you have to play him. I think there's a decent chance that Zach Wilson actually gets benched this season. And granted, look, this is the guy who told you that Jameis Winston was going to play this week. So take my advice with a grain of salt. But Salah has to look – he has to look at everybody in the locker room in the eye. They're – a playoff team. They just beat Buffalo convincingly a couple of weeks ago. They can't accept this.
No, they can't. And I'll tell you what, like, Robert Saleh throughout the season, like, his words have said one thing in press conferences. He's been super, super defensive of Zach Wilson. But his face on the sideline in this game against Patriots said a whole nother thing. Joe Flacco still has more touchdowns this year than Zach Wilson. Like, that is where we are at. And speaking of where we're at, we are unfortunately at the position where we have to talk about another disgusting game. Ravens 13, Panthers 3. I mean, we talked about Lamar Jackson, or at least Dalton and I did on the podcast, the Statner podcast last week, you know, that he's like 26 in the NFL coming into this week in EPA per pass attempt to outside receivers. But DeMarcus Robinson has a big game in this one, 9 of 9 for 128 yards. And still, the Ravens' offense was, for the most part, completely stuck in the mud. And the Panthers, well, I mean, they're always stuck in the mud, especially when Baker Mayfield's under center.
Yeah, Robinson's second-best game of his 7-year career. I think only the third time he's gone over 70 yards. It's like one of these bingo things. Like, how many Ravens would you have had to have guessed before we came up with Robinson being their best offensive player today? You'd be like, oh, you know, surely it's Lamar, it's Mark Andrews, oh, Kenyon Drake's getting a start.
Yeah.
Maybe Justin Hill gets sprinkled in. Oh, Devin Duvernay's had kind of a sneaky little season. No. All those guys, or you might have even guessed Isaiah Likely before you guessed DeMarcus Robinson. And in a week where we were trying so hard to uncover the lesser receivers who could save you in week 11. And what, you know, some of the guys I gave out, I mean, Slayton did okay, and Paris Campbell did okay, and Paris Campbell's probably rostered anyway. Maybe even Slayton was. I played Skronik in a league. I picked up DeMarcus Robinson in the league, and then finally in a 14-teamer and said, no, I don't have the stomach for this. And I cut him, and I hope that his, you know, 18 to 20 points, depending on your scoring system, isn't going to be what costs me. But it's hard to judge how well Lamar is playing right now because he just doesn't have anywhere near the roster that they expected. They've got nothing out of J.K. Dobbins this year. They got just about nothing out of Bateman. Andrews has been in and out of the lineup. They didn't upgrade the receiver room. Duvernay's a nice player to have, but he's being asked to fill a role he doesn't really fit. You know, Drake is obviously a journeyman who could be out of the league at any point. You know, Justice Hill has been cut probably more times than anybody cares to remember. So this is kind of the game that you expected it would be. The Ravens winning ugly. A couple of Justin Tucker field goals. On the flip side, Baker Mayfield, man. I think you could, if you could, like, get Jerry Rice in his prime and Randy Moss in his prime and T.O. and Harrison, whoever you want, the greatest show on turf, Baker Mayfield could sink anybody. Okay, he is the friggin' iceberg, man. He can sink the Titanic. Oh, look, I get it. DJ Moore has always been more of a yardage guy than a touchdown guy, but I see Baker Mayfield. It's just so sad that it's like, oh no, P.J. Walker's not playing. I'm at the point now. I'm ready to go through the Sam Darnold experience again. I'm ready for the Darnold pain again. I can't take this Mayfield thing anymore. And this whole second half, I was sweating. not sweating, but I have Carolina plus the points and pick pools and stuff. Maybe I put a couple bucks on it. I can't remember. It was nothing substantial. But the game was 3-3 for so long, and I'm thinking, well, I'm getting 12. The only way they're going to blow this is if Baker plays so poorly, the Ravens score on defense, or maybe the Carolina goes for it fourth down their own territory, which they did. They tried to win the game, totally defensible. I never thought Mayfield was like the face of the NFL, and I always thought it was kind of funny he got all the commercials, although he actually is pretty good with his comedic timing and all that. But I thought maybe he was over his skis as an NFL commodity. I never thought he would be this horrible. I mean, I'm at the point now where I don't even think he's a justifiable backup, right? I don't think he's – I'd rather have Colt McCoy. I'd rather have Jacoby Brissett. I'd rather have Teddy Bridgewater. You know, I'd rather have Bailey Zappe, you know. I try to get his name right. Although Zappe may be the Patriots starter for all we know in a couple of weeks. But, you know, I'd rather have the Jets guys. I just don't want to watch Baker Mayfield anymore. Not going to flip out about Dante Foreman. The Ravens get paid, too.
Baker, by the way, just before we move on from Baker, Baker Mayfield and Zach Wilson, that feels like the exact same player to me. Like guys that like their peak moments can get you a little excited. Baker Mayfield got he was like an average starting quarterback in 2020 when literally everything was perfect. But like I said, everything should not have to be perfect for you to look like an average starting quarterback. The one thing goes wrong. Zach Wilson got the same problem that Baker Mayfield. The second those guys boot out to the right, the play is over. It's over. The play is finished. Like, and a disaster is about to happen. Zach Wilson can look okay when everything is perfectly designed. Mike LaFleur puts out a perfect game plan, does some nice little gimmicky stuff. The second he's got to drop back like a big boy, it's over. The same thing with Baker Mayfield. Got to drop back like a big boy. It's over.
Let me ask you this, because again, you know, okay, Baker stinks. He's taken more down for the count. Dante Foreman will be fine. That's basically the Panthers, you know, period, close the book. What do we expect from Lamar Jackson the rest of the season?
I mean, I think this is about what you're going to get. You know, 200 passing yards, you got to hope for better touchdown luck. He does make it happen as a rusher with 31 yards and a touchdown. And like, yeah, I think this is what you expect. Like, the Panthers defense is not the worst unit in the world, but they're not like an imposing unit. They just let up like 50 fantasy points to Joe Mixon a couple of weeks ago. You know what I'm saying? So I think this is about what we're going to get.
Fair. I think you're right. A little disappointed that Drake didn't do more today. You know, with the backfield, at least getting the first crack at it. I thought the Ravens would at least get to like 20 points. They only got to 13.
I know this is not like great analysis or anything, and I usually like kind of roll my eyes at this stuff. But it does feel like this year that whenever we're counting on Kenyon Drake, nothing. Whenever we're counting on somebody else, that's when Kenyon Drake has his big moments. That's sort of what it's felt like with Kenyon Drake this year.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There was one week I did a Kenyon Drake hype video. He had a horrible game, and everybody on Twitter who wanted to bash the Drake came after me. And it's fine. I mean, he didn't play well that game. And then the next week when nobody expected anything, he was great. But Baltimore's a team well-coached. Jackson is, I mean, he is a long-term solution. I'm curious to see how the contract ultimately gets solidified, but I can't see how they let him leave. But it's frustrating that they don't, a team that needed a receiver, you know, granted, they expected Bateman to take a step up, but even with that, I thought they needed help in the receiver room. And then the trade deadline comes and goes and they don't get any help. And look, it's not like there were like nine receivers to choose from. I mean, maybe teams wanted too much for their guys. And it's not like, I don't think Pittsburgh was ever going to trade Claypool to Baltimore, and maybe he wouldn't help them that much anyway. But
ain't doing anything in Chicago, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, Baltimore, Carolina, here's a kiss. We chose you to end this list.
Hey, what a treat. Well, that is going to do it for us on a very interesting slate here in week 11. Of course, you can follow Scott on Twitter at Scott_Pienowski. You can follow me if you want to at @MattHarmon_BYB, a couple underscore bros here. And to see someone deep in their fantasy feelings, give a follow to @YahooFantasy. If you'd like to support the show, and please, if you like the show, why not support us a little bit? Please leave us a rating and review.
These backgrounds don't pay for themselves, Matt. We need support.
No, they don't. They absolutely do not. Listen, got to support the show so I can actually keep changing out my records here. Got to get some more records into the house to keep the arsenal stocked here. Anyways, leave us a 5-star rating and review on whatever podcast platform you listen on. We would really appreciate it. And, you know, this show's gone through a lot of transition through the years, so we need some current accurate ratings here.
So I see Hotel California. What else is back there?
Oh, we've got Hotel California, we've got a Dawes album, and a Jimmy Buffett album here for this So I will, Scott, because we talked about it, I'm going to actually make sure I transition these records out like on a bi-weekly basis.
That'll be the best part of the show. Rock and roll, man. Rock and roll.
There we go.
It's all happening.
Hell yeah, man. All right. Well, it is all happening. And of course, tomorrow, what will be happening is Andy Behrens will be back with me to go through the news, recap Sunday night, and of course, preview the week 12 waiver wire. Until then, we're out.